Testing. This is Pam Grundy. It's April 6, 1989, and I'm interviewing David Harlow, who is the attorney for the Cane Creek Conservation Authority. So maybe you could just start by telling me what about this case was the biggest sort of legal challenge that you were, thing that you were attempting to do. What's that? Or is that not, is it,
I don't know,
it's not
if
a
that's
good way to approach it. Was this, maybe we could try a different way, was this a new kind of case to try in terms of trying to present a community? These are just terrible questions, aren't they?
Well, there's...
Maybe you could just start by trying to explain.
There's an old jazz song, the title of which is Compared to What?
Mm-hmm.
Some things were new and some things weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly I had tried cases relating to reservoir construction and application of the National Environmental Policy Act
mm-hmm.
before. And other environmental issues are related in the sense in that you had also had a Corps of Engineers permitting question there, and I had tried cases there also, although I was in both cases a government lawyer for the Corps of Engineers, and that's they went through a rather circuitous process, but that's why they eventually came to me, was the experience in those issues. And I had tried a case for the government related to the B. Everett Jordan Dam and Reservoir, so I had a familiarity with the environmental background and the ecosystems and the water quality and the parameters and the testing that had been done in the Hall River Basin as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately Cane Creek is a part of the Hall Basin. In terms of involvement of a community, the cases that I'd been involved in really didn't deal with that sort of a community question.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm aware that other cases had been. One of the people that we used as an expert witness was a sociologist, I think named Wolf.
Right, Charles Wolf.
Who had a fair amount of experience, although for some reason, I think maybe it was more related to Canadian cases, but where that had been involved in litigation. It's the only time I ever dealt with those issues
mm-hmm.
in a reservoir case. Certainly in any reservoir case, you have, and in lots of environmental cases, you have a weighing not only of those kinds of issues, sociological issues and environmental issues, but lots of other things that are balanced.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you can almost say that everything is sociology based when you're dealing with trading one resource for another.
Mm-hmm.
There is obviously a finite set of resources in the world, and it's all a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how you define the word environmental, it may, to me, environment also means the human environment and therefore the sociological aspects. Of course, predating all of the National Environmental Policy Act and, you know, 1969 forward, certainly you can go back to, you know, Tennessee Valley Authority and all the reservoirs that were built in the 1930s and even before then. By before the 1930s and the TVA, and Bonneville Power and those kinds of New Deal public power things, reservoirs were built by private electric companies. But those issues were involved in that sense. And obviously, I'm sure that they involve from time to time this kind of a sociological community sense. I remember as a teenager reading a novel long since, beyond the fringes of my memory in terms of name or author or anything else, that dealt with the impact on a community and the way a community fought a reservoir being built in the Tennessee Valley.
Mm-hmm.
At that time. It's also, of course, interesting that you see different juxtapositions politically and ideologically of, quote, conservatives or, quote, liberals appearing in different decades and even in different reservoirs on
mm-hmm.
Opposite sides of what are essentially the same underlying issues. That's simply because they are responding to other points in the interplay of all of this.
Well, I'm interested in you talking about this sort of a set of underlying issues. What would you say that in this case were these underlying issues?
You mean just beyond the obvious surface
mm-hmm.
ones in terms of building a reservoir? Well, in one sense, you've got a resource transfer. You're going to take the Owosso and, in effect, the university community or the power structure of Chapel Hill and the power structure of the University of North Carolina. In something like Owosso are pretty well intertwined, and they chose to exploit a water resource that was outside their immediate area rather than, for instance, build up the University Lake, which would have adversely affected other resources that they had. They chose not to do that,
mm-hmm.
keep their ox intact, if you will, and gore someone else's
mm-hmm.
for their benefit. I think I say that without a great deal of emotional involvement. I think you can. We get emotional sometimes, but hopefully you control it and are using it for a purpose if you're a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And many years have passed, and I'm, to me that's a fact. Others might deny it, but that's just what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, maybe that's not all bad either. Maybe that's just, certain laws of human nature taking effect.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's certainly an issue that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was, I think, that there was a certain psychological, ideological, and legal commitment pre-existing of the same power structure of Chapel Hill and the university that they were not going to consider the water from Lake Jordan because they had fought that.
Right.
Having taken a position against that reservoir, they would, no matter what facts might be, I think there was, And even if the facts supported them, I think, irrelevant of whether the facts supported them or didn't support them, I think there was a psychological predisposition that they weren't going to take a position that was contrary to that. They were going to justify the position they had taken 10 years before.
What would make you think that? Is it statements that they made, or just knowing that they had done the fighting, or what? Sure.
Just haven't been involved in the controversy all the way through.
Oh, right,
from Jordan all the way through. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are also other things that one can certainly argue. They had a consulting engineering firm, that said build Cane Creek as opposed to other alternatives. Well, I think there are other factors that tend to drive that too. One of which is, no matter how quote independent quote a consulting engineer is going to be, one, they're going to respond to all of the things being within the same ballpark, not necessarily equal, but just justifiable from a rationale point of view or rationalization point of view. They're going to want to produce what their client really wants, what that power structure wants, mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, they're obviously going to make a hell of a lot more money building a separate reservoir and being the engineer for that than they are in saying designing a pipeline or some other lesser alternative, the rock quarry alternative or other things where they're just really building a pipeline and a pumping station. I'm not waving a great evil finger at them. That's life. I mean, people have predispositions, conflicts of interest, personal agendas, political baggage, everything else goes on in any kind of a complex decision that's going to involve government and the people and the expenditure of a lot of money and the allocation or the transfer of finite resources. I mean, that's a witch's brew that's always going to involve those things, I think.
That sounds like something that would be very difficult for anyone, if you're talking about a judge or someone in the court, engineers, or anybody, to kind of sort out. Do you think that? Do you think this was a hard case to sort of sort out, or do you think no? Or if it's a bad question, just tell me.
Maybe it's an imprecise question. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by sort out?
I guess make a decision on, decide whether to build a reservoir or not, or whether to allow them to build the reservoir or not.
Think so. There wasn't any judge except for Judge Gordon involved. You had an administrative process with the Corps of Engineers permit process. And I think maybe it might have been a difficult question for the Corps. They may have struggled over it more than anybody else. Judge Gordon simply reviewed them on legal bases, and that came very late in the game and really went on procedural issues that didn't address the substantive, and he had no power to deal with the substance of it anyway, except in legal and procedural ways that I don't think addressed the core of your question. Now, you had state action twice in what we call Cane Creek 1 and Cane Creek 2. There were judges involved there, but they dealt once again with legal issues, and I don't think they dealt with it. You know, it wasn't their decision to make. It was their decision to review and say, did you apply the right standards? Did you apply the right law? Have you violated anything in the way you arrived at your decision? It was not theirs to make. In terms of the state administrator process, which was the EMC, the Environmental Management Commission, and its members who were appointed as hearing officers of that, you really have four decisions. You have two times it was tried. Mm-hmm. In both cases, you had hearing officers who actually heard the evidence, made a recommended decision to the full Environmental Management Commission, and then they made decisions. My personal opinion is that only once, in terms of the three members who heard as a panel the evidence in Cane Creek 1, was anybody really trying to reach a decision on the merits, if you will, balancing the issues. I think all of the other times, both times before the full commission, and in the case of the second hearing, the hearing officer, there was just one, as a member of the commission sitting as a hearing officer in the second time. Frankly, my judgment would be that they all made their decision for political reasons. It was either directly or indirectly communicated to them that the Chapel Hill and the university power structure wanted a decision in favor of Cane Creek Reservoir, and they acted in that regard, and they've simply voted that way. I don't have anything personal against any of them, but I think that's not the only time, goodness sakes, that that's ever happened with the Environmental Management Commission. Right. Those people are appointed politically, they're appointed by the governor, and I think they made their judgment in the full commissions accordingly. The hearing officer the second time around, I think, was appointed because he was considered to be somebody who would make the right political decision. Nice gentleman, I can't recall his name. He was a courteous and procedurally fair individual as a hearing officer, but sometimes you have judges and juries who have their minds made up for whatever reason before they ever hear a case. And I think that probably that was the situation there. Now, the first hearing panel, I think they really wrestled with it. I'm not sure that they intended to in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think they probably had a predisposition to go forward with a reservoir. Certainly the chairman of the first three-member panel was an individual with a public works background. He'd been head of the Buncombe County or the Asheville Water and Sewer Authority, or been its chief engineer or something like that, and came in with a kind of a pro-government bias, I think. But, and I think all three of them did, but I think that over the course of time that they wrestled with it, and two of those three came to feel that the reservoir was not appropriate. What you had there was the attempt to weigh, the real question was, two questions were, one, do you have any impact at all out of the North Carolina Environmental Procedures Act, a little NEPA, if you will? And the government position was, and the Attorney General's position was, it didn't apply, that it was just some nice window dressing, mouthing, that the state government ought to think about environmental things, but this was something that was just being done by local water and sewer authority and had no relevance. Mm-hmm. The second legal issue in terms of balancing environmental things was whether or not, I think it was section 162A-7 or something like that, I've long since forgotten, whether the factors involved there and things like public interest set forth and whether this condemnation authority was to be granted, whether or not one had to consider environmental issues, sociological issues, et cetera, et cetera. I think there was a time in the late 70s when environmental law was moving to accommodate much more in the area of sociological concerns, broaden the concept of environmental impact in that way. I think there's been a retreat in general from that position. I haven't tried any reservoir cases since the second Cane Creek case, so I can't say for sure, but I think it's been a retreat, a narrowing of the scope of the concept since then. I personally think that's wrong, not necessarily because I'm the greatest liberal or environmentalist that ever came down the road. Sociology, as whether or not it ought to be part of environmental concept, that cuts both ways. I think it ought to be in there. Mm-hmm. Having litigated both sides of the street, to me, there's nothing more important than the human environment. I'm just going to be that narrow-minded about it as a human. That's the most important thing that you can have. That may mean that you may sacrifice some things from a plant or animal or ecosystem environment if you weigh it against the needs of the populace. But people and their needs, whether it's a particular community there or the communities that stand to benefit from the project, all of that ought to be weighed in. That's a human environment. We try to protect the non-human environment, maybe to some extent, because we think that it's there, put there as a trust, that we should. But you know, a heck of a lot of the motivation is to protect the environment for us as human beings. Whether it's just the sheer pleasure of seeing a pristine or unique or unusual environment, or that these plants and animals may be useful to us in ways not yet foreseen. But you've got to look at it in the context of what of people, and you can't worry exclusively about the environment. Now, I think that also makes, I mean, it, like I said, it cuts both ways. And you look at the people who are going to use the resource, who are going to benefit from what's going to be changed and altered, and you have to look at, you know, hey, how many people are being impacted in terms of whatever that project is too, and so you weigh it. To me, you should weigh it all together. I'm not sure that's the way that environmental law today is has wound up, but...
Well, so would you say that the Cane Creek really came along at a good time in terms of environmental law because it was beginning to consider, have this broader scope of things? I mean, does it seem like...
Hmm. I don't think it ever, I don't think that ultimately that any of the major points in any of the pieces of litigation really ultimately turned on that. Mm-hmm. I think that was, it may have turned on advocacy of the sociology of the situation and the impact on people that live there. But I don't think that it really ultimately was founded either way on that. You know, certainly the rulings that went against Cane Creek, against the Conservation Authority, obviously it was not good for, and the ones that we won, and there were plenty of wins and losses for everybody along the whole path of litigation. I don't think ultimately it was what we really won on. We won because of the strength of in the hearing sense in the first Cane Creek, we won because of the strength of the alternatives, the arrogance of the Water and Sewer Authority, and just general good advocacy that this was going to affect a heck of a lot of people, and it ought not to be done unless you really looked at the alternatives, and that there wasn't, and finally that the position of the Water and Sewer Authority didn't hold up well from an analytical sense on cross-examination. That their judgments were subjective and they could not support their positions in an objective data scientific sense.
Well, I remember the cross-examination, I think, of Daniel Oakland in the first Cane Creek thing, and asking about numbers and how you can prove that these things are here and that they're bad for you, or that kind of thing. So, they said, we don't, we can't.
Yeah, that's an example. And I think, you know, beyond at the Court of Appeals, our victory was simply that they found that the Environmental Act, the North Carolina Environmental Policy Act, had to apply, had to be taken into consideration by an action of the Environmental Management Commission in giving this authority. But it was the concept of, you know, the Environmental Act as a whole will apply, not that they had to necessarily take the sociology specifically. It didn't turn on, the sociology was wrapped into it maybe, but it didn't turn on that point, because they were taking a much easier point for us to overcome. Our other victories were basically legal and procedural and maneuvering, taking advantage of errors on the other side, or, you know, kind of things.
Well, I mean, it seems from the top of you that in a way, the things that seem to have been important to the people living in Cane Creek were really not the things that were important legally. Is that a reasonable generalization? I mean, the things about the community, what they didn't want to lose, what they were afraid of.
Yes and no. I think in an analytic, legal sense, I think that's correct. But in two ways, it's incorrect. One is the fact that you could humanize the situation gave us great opportunity for advocacy. A human story is always more compelling than one that's built on cross-examination of sheets of data. Secondly, the things that motivated these people while not directly having legal analytic strength, gave them the strength and the interest and the willingness to fight. Mm-hmm. And if they hadn't had the kind of willingness to fight, you know, they would have had a reservoir there 10 years or 15 years even before they did. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like it's going to be very hard to try to explain sort of how the whole thing.
You mean their interests in the community and the sociology of
how that relates to the legal part. I'm trying to tie it all in together.
Well, litigation is not, you know, just a dry, you know, analysis. What I'm saying is that their thoughts and